We're back in the interview groove this week as Jeff Hendrick shares his thoughts on virtual church. We chat about video capture and editing and wrap up things with some great listener feedback. All that and more coming up on episode 254 of Wells Tech, Ministry in a YouTube Generation. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 254, recorded on Tuesday, September 18th, 2012. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you are listening to a show that focuses on technology, yes, but technology as it relates to ministry. So we try and figure out what that is and how that maybe can make a difference in your ministry. So thanks for listening. And joining me at my virtual side, as usual, Sally Draper from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
I am great, Martin. Happy to join you today. Got a touch of fall in the air in Sleepy Eye.
We got a touch of fall here in Wisconsin as well. So
even had a frost warning overnight. Imagine that.
You're kidding.
No.
That's depressing. At least to me. So, some people love fall. I mean, I don't mind fall, except the raking of the leaves stuff, but it's nice. I like early fall, actually. I like the cooler evenings and a little bit lower humidity, and that's fine with me. But fall is kind of a good news, bad news, because you always know
what's coming next.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So speaking of what's coming next, what are we doing on the show today?
Today we are talking about video creation, and I'm excited to have an interview to share with someone who's really good at video creation, and that's our friend Jeff Hendricks, who's done some really interesting ministry technology videos that we're going to share as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to jump back into our interview schedule, because that's always a little bit of a change up for us, of course. It allows us to reach out and talk to people who are trying interesting things in technology and in ministry, and Jeff's certainly one of those. At a very very early on in his professional career, so to speak, he's got some great experience, which as I think of my college days, that would have been seminary days, that would have been awesome to be able to do projects like he's working on.
Yep, he is a seminary student at Bethany, and as we talk to him, and as you say, it's great for our future leaders to have the kind of skills of video creation. And for those of us that are out there working ministry in lots of different ways, video is a new channel for communication. Mm-hmm. I guess you'd call it maybe the YouTube generation.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So we thought before we do the interview, and this is actually something new for us too. We did a video interview. For those of you that are watching, you'll be able to see Jeff and see us interact with him, which is kind of neat. Obviously, we'll have the audio too. But in prep for that, we thought maybe the topic of the day would be video creation in general. We recognize that this is an exploding area, not just on the internet in general, but in ministry especially, as churches and schools and religious organizations are figuring out that, hey, we can't miss this bandwagon. This is what our potential visitors, viewers, members are wanting to see. And Sally, you've been kind of doing that there in Sleepy Eye with your live streaming. You recognize that there is power in that video. I know a lot of congregations that are putting up the sermons online, and that's not an easy thing, especially to do well, right?
Yeah,
a lot of components.
We could even talk about a certain podcast I know that's doing video these days, Martin, obviously are a video wizard, so you probably have experience about how it's not always an easy thing to do.
The word wizard is it's a gross overstatement. I'm learning as I go.
A special hat.
I'm learning as I go, just like on the audio side. And most of our listeners will attest to some of the ups and downs we've had over the last 4.5 years or so. So why video? I guess that'd probably be a good question to start with. Why should ministries in general spend some time learning video and trying to do it as best as they can? Why should they do it?
Well, I think it's a really great means of communication. Obviously, you are reaching out. It's like you have your own television station now, and you can self-publish your message. And being part of the conversation these days isn't just written text, but also delivering the images to go along to support that. More and more people have expectations as they visit websites and things that they're going to find video there. And they're accessing it on their mobile devices, just all different ways that video can be used. And certainly we have a message worth communicating. And so why not use the mediums that are available to do that?
One of the reasons why not, I guess some would say, is it takes time and sometimes it takes money. It's not easy. So if you are thinking of, let's say, doing a simple thing like broadcasting your sermons, whether that be on demand, kind of in a time shifted fashion where it's downloadable or live, there are definitely considerations there, just in the production side, let alone the technology. Actually, the technology side is a little bit easier, I think, than the, you know, getting it ready for prime time, so to speak, with good audio from wherever it is that you're recording it from, whether it's a sanctuary or the Bible study hall or wherever, to lighting, to camera angles, to those kinds of things, and then the people to run it. So that it doesn't run itself, and so you need a volunteer staff to do that, and people who kind of get it as well. It's not just somebody that you want to just ask maybe the eighth graders to come in and run the video for you, right?
Yeah, that's very true. And you want consistency week to week so that you're not, you know, publishing things that are grossly different as far as like your worship service or whatever. So, right. Yeah, lots of considerations there and quite easy to do it badly.
So that's the why. I think there are some reasons, some very compelling reasons to do that. I know when I come to a website, I expect to see video at this point, and I think it adds a lot, and it would add a lot to any congregation's website or school's website to have video content available there. But who's the audience? We've talked about some of the applications, but there are probably things that we're not even thinking of at this point.
Yeah, just that experience of live video with us. We've been really surprised who the audience is. We've had people who've watched who are traveling around the world who, you know, don't have access to regular worship opportunities or whatever. We've had a lot of people watch who are shut-ins and sick and who greatly appreciate, you know, having the ability to be connected with a congregation even though they can't be there in person. Certainly, video isn't all about worship video, though, and you can do videos on topics or things like that, and you can do them specifically targeted to internal audiences as well. So kind of that in-reach aspect where maybe you have a mom's video series or something like that. Whatever you create with mobile devices or laptops or whatever, you can also take out to your shut-ins or your seniors in your congregation and share video with them. I know we've done not really true video, but a lot of photo slideshow things that we've turned into video, and just sharing those pictures with our shut-ins means the world to them.
Yep.
So,
Yeah, I think there's a number of different aspects to this. First, there's the, you know, the educational side, which is kind of what we do, but I think there's the promotional side too. And, you know, maybe one of the untapped areas is that in-reach side where you are sharing with members things that maybe they don't normally have experience with, or maybe have been afraid to try, like Bible class. So if you're videotaping your Bible classes and presenting that online, then you've got a promotional tool to say to your members who aren't in Bible class, hey, there's good stuff going on here. There's learning going on. It's not threatening. You're not going to be asked to read if you don't want to read. You may not be asked a direct question to something that you don't know the answer to. It's come on in, the water's fine. And a good way to do that is through video.
Yeah, we've done teasers for different things upcoming sermon series or in particular our youth group. I'll just have to share a link in the show notes to a teaser that my husband did for a youth group. That was a lot of fun and they got a huge kick out of it. And he's had the kids do stuff in front of a green screen to do videos with them and get them involved in it. So lots of opportunities.
Yep, absolutely. So lots of events that could be done. You just have to think a little bit more creatively. You do have to plan ahead, of course. You know, there's a lot of considerations that go into this, but I think it's well worth the effort. So,
and one more thing to mention there, Martin, we talked about sharing it on your website, but also sharing on places like Facebook and Google+ can extend the reach beyond what you would normally expect because different people share it themselves and, you know, kind of the ripple effect of that whole social media structure that can really benefit.
Yeah. Plus, as you think about it, just sharing on your website probably isn't a great way for people who want to view it maybe on mobile devices. So if you get it onto some of those social sharing sites like YouTube or Facebook even, they all have mobile components that make it a lot easier to view video and share video too. So
definitely.
Okay. So. We should probably jump into the how, and that's a pretty big nut to crack because there are lots of ways to do it. There are lots of tools, and fortunately, I think as I compare video editing and video capture and those kinds of things now as compared to maybe even 3 or 4 years ago, just a ton easier. Plus, there's a lot of great online video tutorials about how to do it. So you're not kind of on an island out there. If you really want to do it, you can find resources to do it. And on the software side, there are lots of great free resources and some that come right along with the operating system sometimes.
Sure. On the PC, you can use Movie Maker. On the Mac, you get iMovie along for the ride. So those are a great place to start. Both kind of had that storyboarding kind of effect where you have an area to work with the video and you can watch a preview right in the software to see how it's looking and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I actually use iMovie on my iPad as well. And what's cool about that, having the mobile connection, is if you have a Mac, then you can import your movies from your iPad to your Mac and do additional editing and things like that. So.
Yeah, and these are what I would call consumer level products, although I think for a lot of purposes, a lot of ministry purposes, they will serve just fine. They're not over the top, difficult to use. I think they're drag and drop and you can kind of figure it out and they provide help files and videos and those kinds of things. I've used both of them, but I don't know that I prefer one over the other. I think they both get the job done. And then they make it easy on the output side. They give you lots of options as far as how do you want this to be viewed? And you just kind of point and click. Do you want this to go on Facebook? Do you want this to go on YouTube? Are you going to burn this to a DVD? Is this going to go on your website? And you just click the button, and then it knows what kind of encoding to use and the file size. It'll compress it if it's going to be more mobile friendly. Those kinds of things are all done for you.
Encoding sounds like a big, long, ugly word, so it's nice that it takes care of it for you.
It does, yep.
You can also pay money for software that will take you kind of up a level, like Adobe Premiere, Pinnacle Studio, Camtasia. Mm-hmm. That kind of class of software is going to give you more capabilities. Our interviewee talked about Adobe After Effects being another one.
I haven't used. Yeah. I have used Premiere. That's what we use to edit our show, although I'm definitely a rookie at it, but it's extremely powerful with transitions and the ability to encode in lots of different formats and splice and do overlays, those kinds of things. So you can get pretty fancy, although I think a lot of that you can do with some of the free stuff as well. So if you need to take it to the next level, if you're doing a lot of it as well, it renders a little bit faster. They're a little bit more prosumer focused or professional focused and well worth a look. I think most of them have free trials if you want to see if it's for you. So that would be a recommendation. Just download one and play with it for a month or 30 days or whatever the trial period is and see if that's meeting some needs that maybe aren't met on the free side.
There's a whole class of video editors online, the whole Web 2.0 world, where you can do your work right online, including probably one of the most popular is just doing editing right there on YouTube after you've uploaded videos to YouTube. They have a pretty robust editor, Martin, built into YouTube, so you can do effects and things like that.
They've had that for about a year, and I think for a lot of our purposes, you can do a lot of just basic editing that's going to meet most of your, 95% of your needs. So, and it renders it, YouTube does the rendering, it stores the video. And if you're actually using something like we're doing now, where you're streaming directly and it's already up on YouTube, it's being recorded on YouTube, then there's no download at all. So you don't have to download the video, edit, and then upload to your favorite service. It's all done in the cloud, which is great. You don't need much computing power to do that at all, which used to be a real big barrier. Mm-hmm. You had to have a very powerful computer to do video editing, or it would, would bog down or crap out altogether. So this is a great way to avoid that whole thing. Let YouTube servers do all the crunching of the video, and then all you have to do is work with the interface. So,
not just a powerful computer, but a lot of storage space available. So you could, needed to have a lot of dedicated space, because the files can get really huge as it's doing all that crunching and encoding and technical stuff that goes on. So
you got the straight YouTube stuff, which is, video and audio, and it does a great job at that. But there are some niche products coming out now that we've come across that might be of some interest to some of our listeners, Sally.
Yeah, starting with Powtoon. It's powtoon.com, which you can use to spice up your presentations. You can also use it to share video created from the presentations. And this is more kind of an animation drawing kind of effect. So you've seen stories told where things are drawn and hands pull them on and off and that kind of thing. And that's what Powtoon will do for you. And I found an excellent example that we can share with our audience. Introduction to our flipped classroom kind of ties into an ed tech topic. But there's a teacher who created a really thorough Powtoon video that introduces her students to the flipped classroom concept. Easy for me to say. And so for an example, you can look at that. You can check out their website. They have example videos there as well. And you can create some for free. You can sign up for additional access and more storage space and things at a price. But it is a free tool available.
Great. Awesome.
Another one we'll make mention of is something called Extra Normal. And I'll have to find an example video of that. But basically, you can pick characters to interact on the screen. You can control their motions and things, and then write them a script, and they'll do language translation of your written text and have the character speaking back and forth with that. So it's a different look. It might be fun for something for a youth group video or whatever.
Sure. Then there's another niche, which is kind of semi-video, more like picture animation or photo slideshows that can be set to, that can be output to video. And Sally, you've used one quite extensively, I know, in your classroom and elsewhere, Animoto.
Right. Animoto is a real favorite of mine. And if you're a teacher and you haven't signed up for Animoto yet, I highly encourage you
to. You're missing out.
Yes. Yeah, as an educator, you can get a free professional level account, which normally costs $30 a year, and not just for you, but you get a code that you can use for up to 50 student accounts. And so it's a easy drag and drop kind of thing where you put in your photos, you pick some background music. You can also put in video clips, so you can mix in with the photos some video, some motion stuff as well. And they provide you a lot of basic images and video clips that you can use too. So really excellent tool. I think I have a video from our Bible camp this summer that I can share as an example of an Animoto video. It's a great presentation tool.
Great. Well, once you create all that video, you've got to post it someplace, and there are options there as well. We've talked about YouTube already, which is the standard. We live in this YouTube generation where if you're taking video of something, you've got to get it up on YouTube or nobody's going to see it. But there are other options too. Mevio is one that you may want to consider. That's a free service. And then the one that we use here at the Synod is Vimeo, and that is also a free service. But if you do a lot of video, it's probably worth upgrading to their, I think it's called Premium or Gold or something like that. It's about $60 a year. Well worth it because it ups your storage and ups your bandwidth as well. So Vimeo is just a solid service that I would recommend because you can embed all of these services right on your own web page. So it's not a problem of, you know, you don't want the wrapper of all the advertising maybe that goes around some of these services, especially like YouTube, where you can now embed these on your page and it just becomes part of the experience that you want to have more control over.
Yep. And one tip there, Martin, worth sharing is, especially if you're embedding YouTube, one of the things that they do automatically with your embedded video is at the end, they suggest other videos for your watchers to click on. And that can be something that's totally out of your control and could be some things that you don't approve of or want associated with your website or your message. And so there is a setting on YouTube videos where you can turn off suggesting related videos at the end. And I highly recommend that you look into the additional settings if you're doing embed code and turn off that option. So when the video gets to the end, the screen just goes black. It doesn't list a lot of other videos, suggestions.
Great.
Yeah.
So that's video in a nutshell, as much of a nutshell as we can provide in, 15 minutes here. But there's a lot of things to explore. Again, a lot of online resources if you want to get into video. I guess the only thing that I can tell you is if we can do it, you can do it. It's not so burdensome anymore that you can't get into it. And again, a lot of considerations, but a lot of options for you.
Definitely.
Sally, we should probably jump to our interview with Jeff. We mentioned that at the top of the show, Jeff Hendricks, who is a graduate student at Bethany. He's in pastoral studies, and he did some exciting stuff. Bethany is one of those schools that seems to have a niche for video. I know that as I've talked to different people from Bethany out there in Mankato, Minnesota, they really take their video seriously, and they've got some, I think, some good classes out there, and Jeff is a product of that, and I know that he has worked hard at some of these projects, and the one that we're going to talk to him about is his thesis, and he did a longer paper, which we'll have a link to in the show notes, but he also he made great use of video to kind of capsulize what he was talking about in that thesis. So let's go ahead and play that interview at this point, and then we'll join you back in just a sec. Joining us today, Jeff Hendricks from Mankato, Minnesota, social media director at Radio Mankato and postgraduate student at Bethany Lutheran, also in Mankato, pursuing a pastoral ministry degree. Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Really good of you to be here. First of all, maybe just introduce yourself a little bit, what you're about, family life, congregation, education, work, hobby, just the Reader's Digest version of Jeff Hendricks.
Yeah, well, I'm from Michigan originally. I moved to Bethany, moved to Mankato to get a communication degree at Bethany. My family still lives in Michigan. I went to Indiana to get a master's degree in telecommunications, digital storytelling, and now I'm back here at the seminary. And I was fortunate enough to get hired at, like you said, Radio Mankato, and I work as the social media director there now. So that's my life.
What year are you at Bethany as far as your pursuit of your advanced degree?
This is my first year at seminary.
Okay. And I assume Bethany has a similar length program to Mequon, three or 3 or 4 years.
It's a four-year program, three years in seminary, and then one vicar year.
Okay, very good. Well, blessings on that work. But that's not exactly why we wanted to talk to you, right, Sally?
That's right. We actually caught wind on Google+ of your master's thesis that you worked on, I guess, most recently, and the fact that you were turning that thesis into some video. I think we even have a little snippet of your video to play for our audience. So. Mm-hmm.
Few people would claim that watching a church service on TV is the same thing as attending one in real life. It would be like watching a theater production on your television. The experience is different. There's little participation and almost no interaction. The internet changed things. Live interaction and communication between people and between groups became a possibility. First through BBS, early internet chat rooms, forums, and later in virtual churches. But still with these, one might be talking, and many might be listening. It would be like talking in church. Are talking and communication the level of interaction that makes a church, church? A distinction was made in 2000 by Christopher Helland between online religion and religion online. Online religion referred to sites where users were simply given information about their religion. But religion online referred to sites where users could participate in a religious activity. Neither one of these models, employed independently by online churches, seemed to work or to form sustainable communities. But in the age of social media, the line is blurred now more than ever between online religion and religion online. Religious blogs and vlogs promote information dissemination, but attract a group of followers and allow commenting, remixing, and sharing. And various online tools allow communication that previously could only be done offline, now making online communities somewhat sustainable. Within the past few years, online churches have skyrocketed. A 2009 study by the Barna Group found that 64% of Americans say they are completely open to carrying out and pursuing their faith in an environment that differs from a typical church. New social tools of the internet can make communities sustainable. But does that mean a church should make use of the internet for church? While some things that a church does can be done online, not everything can be remediated.
So we wanted to just talk to you a bit about the concepts in your master's thesis.
Yeah.
It focuses on the virtual church concept, and then a little bit about the video production that went along with it. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your degree and thesis.
Sure. My degree was in digital storytelling, and it was for 2 years we tried to define these two kind of ambiguous, vague terms. It's a bigger job than you might think, digital and storytelling. So what is digital and what is storytelling? I think digital is a little bit more easy to define. You've got three phases of digital, the recording and digitizing phase, the editing phase, and the playback phase. So if you have any one of those three phases, then your project is digital. And if not, then it's not. And I have to tell you, I did watch your podcast or listen to your podcast on digital storytelling back in April. And it's a little bit different than what my program was. And I think you talked about a slide projector being digital storytelling. And in our program, that wouldn't, in the strict sense, qualify for digital. Okay. So I just had to throw that out there. it was a good podcast anyway.
We should have had you on to interview about digital storytelling back then.
Yeah, what I'm mostly interested in is the storytelling side. What? Give us a good definition of that.
Oh boy, that might take a little bit longer. but we always ask the question: What is a story, and does it always have to have three acts? Because that's what we've grown up knowing what a story is. It has an exposition, introduction. It has a problem where it introduces the protagonist or antagonist, and then it has the resolution with the climax.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a lot of, say, video games today, they don't exactly follow that three-act structure. They have a lot of input from the game player as to where the story is going and where it develops, and so it's a lot different than just a normal three-act play. But most would call video game stories anyway. So that was one thing that we talked about. Another thing that is kind of popular now that I've noticed is anything that creates emotion is a story, where you don't actually have to have any plot at all. As long as it creates emotion, then it's a story. I don't know if I buy into that. I do think, though, that emotion and other things are signs of good storytelling. But I think storytelling still has to have some sort of message and some sort of structure to it.
What was intriguing about this topic that caused you to write a thesis about it? What was the draw?
Well, I've always been interested, obviously, in religion. I'm at the seminary now, and I wanted to do something that combined communication, digital storytelling, with religion. And I thought about it for a while. Originally, I was going to do something in churches. But then my advisor mentioned something in class about internet churches, and I had never really looked into them before. And so I started looking into that and seeing where it could go. And eventually, I decided to look at how an online church views the sacraments, because you can't obviously have physical bread, wine, and water in an online virtual setting. And so I looked at how they described them, what they talked about with these things, and how it affected their belief system.
Interesting topic. And then, like we said, you turned that into a couple of videos that kind of condensed that big topic. I don't know. Your thesis was pretty long, I think, when we took a look, into just two videos that capitalized on the main concepts and things. So tell us about that process, taking this hefty topic. And a lot of theological topics aren't something you can just glance over quickly. And you turned it into a video.
Yeah, no, you're right. My thesis was 123 dry pages of academic writing. And I had to condense all that, squeeze the life out of it into about two-minute videos. And if there's something in between easy as pie and making a camel go through the head of a needle, my thesis video would be in there somewhere, so the difficulty. I enjoyed the process. I had to really narrow down the script, what I was going to say. And I should tell you, the videos were actually for showing in class at Ball State University. They're using it in the introduction to digital technology class. I'm not sure if that's the exact title. But they're using it in a freshman level class to introduce the topic of religion on and media, how the two intersect. And they had me talk about it last year. I came in and I led class for a half hour. And since I'm not there this year, and that's what I wrote my thesis on, they asked me to make these videos so they could show them in class. And it's an online class. So they're using me as a teacher for the day still.
That's awesome.
I would think there's a lot of parallels here in your pastoral studies, because every Sunday morning as you get up in the pulpit, you're really asked to take a pretty wide topic, or potentially wide topic, or a text that could say a lot of a lot of different things, and then crystallize that.
Yeah. We're about 3 weeks into our homiletics course, and that's some things we've noticed too. Those are some things.
What kind of tools did you use to create the video?
I used After Effects, Adobe After Effects, Adobe Illustrator, and I think I used Photoshop just a little bit too. First and foremost, starting with pen and paper. I had to, first of all, write my script down. Make an outline, make a storyboard, and that was crucial for this, because I needed to know when I could be on camera and when I couldn't be on camera for that part of it. And when I wasn't, then I would put in all the graphic animations, and I had to build those all independently.
Jeff, you sound like a poster boy for the pastor of today that has a lot of great skills to bring to the ministry. And this is a digital age. And so I think many people would want to know, you know, how they could get started with these kind of tools to assist in their ministry efforts and things. Do you have any recommendations for the normal person out there that doesn't have time to get a thesis in digital story, a master's in digital storytelling?
Yeah, well, my video, making the video, really had nothing to do with what I learned at Ball State with my thesis. That was more of an academic, scholarly program. I was thesis director, not creative project. But all my creative skills I learned while I was a student at Bethany Lutheran College. And, even within the past few years since I left, their video production program has just really taken off, and they focus a lot now on After Effects and graphic design. In fact, they've got a whole new major, media arts, that's focusing on that. They didn't have that when I was there. But that's where I learned how to use After Effects and how to do storytelling using video. And they're doing a conference here coming up on media and world outreach. Not really focusing on the tools too much, but on using different tools. So if you're interested in that, that might be a place to start too.
Yeah, we've talked about that a bit on the podcast. We'll make sure and have a link to the upcoming conference. It's in October, I believe. Martin and I will be there. So looking forward to it. So one more question for you this morning before we let you go to class. We know that you are also working on developing a catechism app, like a mobile app. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that project.
Yeah. And I didn't start this off, but Grace in Action came to some people at Bethany, and they had this idea of a catechism app. And I've gotten involved with it with my skills. I've designed a few apps when I was in my grad studies in Indiana. And so I've gotten involved in this, and it's going to be, I think, targeted towards, our broad goal is targeting it to other nations, getting it out to Japan, getting it out to, countries in Asia, things like that. Firstly, we'll make it in English and then hopefully translate it into these different languages. But it will be for the, I guess, prosumer, not really meant as a teaching tool for pastors not in a catechetical class, but for just the regular layperson to pick up their iPad or maybe mobile phone, iPhone or something, and watch videos about the catechism and just read the catechism too in an interactive way. I wish I could show you some things. Now, we don't have our project isn't that far along yet. We're still building it. It's going to include video in probably the same style that you saw mine, probably the same style as mine, because I showed that to some other people on our committee, and they kind of thought the same thing that you did, how it's a useful way to show kind of these deep theological subjects. Mm-hmm. And there's no way else to really talk about it and just make people understand it cognitively. I shouldn't say that, but that's a good way of doing it. And so we'll use that style, and we'll have the text of the catechism and then maybe links to other, maybe podcasts and essays too on this.
Awesome. You'll have to keep us up to date on that.
Yeah, what's the timetable for that, Jeff? Do you have any kind of project plan?
For the app?
For the app, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to have a showing in October at the conference at Bethany.
Ah, great. Sure.
So you'll be able to see it there. Beyond that, we don't have a deadline, but we do need some things. If I could put a plug in for this, we do need a developer for the app. We need a web developer. We have all the mobile stuff and we have the design figured out. We have the video figured out, but we do need a developer that's good with Python or something similar to that. And if they contact me, I can give them more, given more information on that. And also, we do need pastors or educated lay people to record videos for us for this application, because we're going to make this reach as many people as possible and get the expertise of pastors that are, you know, really passionate and big on maybe topics such as baptism or communion, things like that, chief parts of the catechism.
Sure. Well, we will definitely put your contact information in the show notes so people can get a hold of you. And that sounds exciting. We'll look forward to following the progress of that. And maybe when you've got something to show, you can come back on the show and give all of our listeners a preview of that as well.
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay.
Sally, I think that the media in World Missions Conference is going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to learning a little bit more and hopefully seeing Jeff there as well.
Yeah, I think just like you said, a good fit for Bethany, especially with their media production degrees that they have, to get involved with media and world missions. So looking forward to it. It's October 12th through 14th at Bethany in Mankato. We'll have a link in the show notes to the conference registration information.
Yeah, that's
and hopefully
up.
We'll meet some other Wells Techers there.
Absolutely. Maybe we can have a little party out there, a little Wells Tech gathering. Should we move on to news and tech?
I think we should. And for those of you that have been under a rock the last week or so, maybe you didn't hear that there's a new iPhone that's hitting the markets, I believe, next Monday, the 24th. Or maybe it's this Friday.
The 21st, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The phone,
and,
at least.
Mm-hmm. The big deal is it's a little bit taller, I think, maybe a little bit thinner. And I read one article that they're kind of pushed the limits on what our eyes can comprehend in that size frame or whatever, but it does go to the 16:9 video dimensions and things, and lots of other improvements with the iPhone 5. There's also improvements with the iPod Touch, I believe.
Yep.
So if you're in the market, apparently somebody is, because
they're selling a lot of them.
Their sales are like remarkable on the first day. And look, you can even get iPod Touch in colors.
Just
what I needed, a green iPod. So if it's on your wish list, now's the time, or perhaps it's time to buy an iPhone 4S or something that you can get for a little bit cheaper. But definitely big news in tech this week.
Mobile's big. Mobile's big. And the timing is right here, because we're probably in a few weeks going to be launching our new Wells app. And
awesome.
You'll need a smartphone to take advantage of that. So
I'm looking forward
to
it.
More news to come on that. Sally, let's move on to our picks of the week.
All right. And my pick of the week is actually a book pick. It's called Understanding Comics, The Invisible Art, and it's by Scott McCloud. And this is a real breaking pick, because it was written, I think, in like 1994 or something like that. It's not a new book, but it's one that I actually discovered thanks to our book selection for Wells Tech. We're reading Presentation Zen. We kicked that off in last week's podcast. And Presentation Zen author Gar Reynolds has a huge recommendation of this Understanding Comics. So tying together what we talked about Presentation Zen last week with our conversation about video production, digital storytelling with Jeff, apparently this book comes in and fills that niche. Not just talking about comic book art, but actually about telling a story frame by frame, that kind of thing. And so if you do presentations or videos, or if you have a website, I read a review that said this was the best thing for website design. It's got art history in it. It really makes you think. So I am about a third of the way through the book. Still have lots to learn from Mr. McCloud, but it is an interesting read. It's written in like comic book style, graphic novel, if you want to call it that, and very detailed, and lots to learn about conveying a message with imagery. So
that's great.
Yeah.
I got to make sure my wife knows about this, because this she teaches art, and I think there's absolutely application here for that kind of stuff. So All right. My pick, Sally, is actually a little bit of a rerun, I'll call it. It was not technically a pick. It was part of our Wells Hacker series last summer. And it came to my mind now because I've been on my my Nexus 7 tablet. I've been doing a couple of reading plans. And so I'm going through different sections of the Bible. So I'm right now in the New Testament side. I'm going through the epistles. And I've kind of rediscovered for myself the beauty of the narrated Bible. And there's a version that I particularly like, the Listener's Bible narrated by Max MacLean, who's got that that English accent. And it just adds a little bit of a dynamic for me. So I use YouVersion. And YouVersion has this built in, so I go to my NIV version, and then there's a button down at the bottom that says, you know, click to listen, and then I can read and listen as he reads it. Just a beautiful rendition of the Bible, and with a little bit of dramatic music, and then, you know, very expression-filled narration of it, and he just does a great job at it. Great job at this. And I think there's ministry application here too for pastors or for teachers who read the Bible aloud to students or parishioners. Just gives you a little bit of a different flair or sense for maybe what could be highlighted within a particular reading. I know we've all heard the droll, you know, monotone, you know, reading sometimes, and we've probably done it ourselves. This is on the other end of the spectrum where it's dramatized, not just through the music, but in the expression and what words are highlighted and how words go together, and just kind of brings it to life. And I think it's well worth listening once in a while as you prep to read a particular passage to a classroom or to, you know, in church. And I just enjoy listening in general. It's got the right price tag. It's free. Mm-hmm. And it comes along with, like I said, YouVersion, but it's also on Bible Gateway as well. So if you want to, if you use Bible Gateway and you're looking up a passage, there's a play button there. And this is what it uses, at least for the NIV version. And it's an NIV 84. So that's good as well. And just a beautiful piece of work. You can also buy this on Amazon if you want to just plug it in the car or CD or whatever. So, or I think you can download it via MP3 as well. So good stuff. I like it.
Excellent. All right. Time to move on then to an announcement of our 7 best topic for the month of October.
And what is that 7 best topic?
Coming up at the beginning of October, we are going to be talking about the 7 best member, prospect, and student management tools. So just dealing with a lot of different data that we want to keep up with in a church office or school office related to those different populations, our members, our prospective members, and our students, and how do you manage that? Please let us know what tools or tricks, you know, help you to keep up with that information. Do you have online forms where people can fill it in or notify you of changes? Do you regularly poll your congregation for updated information? And then what software do you keep all that in? Is it a whole bunch of complex spreadsheets? Do you have a database solution that you'd like to recommend? Let us hear from you so we can include your recommendations in our 7 best list.
And that's in a couple weeks now, right? So only a couple weeks to get your picks in. I think this should be a hot topic because everybody has to deal with this, whether it's on the church level, the school level, the organizational level. Everybody has mailing lists, and that's difficult to maintain, just to get accurate data in, but then also to manipulate the data once you've got it in there for reporting and doing pictorial directories, phone directories, those kinds of things. That's all part of the package of an organization. So we would love to get a really high class list of resources here that can help our listeners out.
Yeah, and I guess anytime you're managing data like that, there are security concerns around that. You know, do you go in the cloud? How do you protect the data if you do put it in the cloud? There's lots of issues around dealing with data for sure.
Okay. Listener feedback. I think we've got some.
We do. Actually, kind of a a snowball that turned into something really big. So I'm going to apologize up front because I am not up on everything that was shared this week. There is so much, and I'm excited by that. I'm going to start by just pointing out that on our Wells Tech website, we have a lot of different ways that you can communicate with us. And there's a whole row of social icons. So you can talk to us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+. You can join our Digo group, which is a great way to share links easily, share images on Pinterest, go to the Wells Tech Wiki. One in particular this week that kind of took off was our Wells Tech Listserv. And for those who aren't familiar with that, it's basically a subscription service where you can email a whole group of Wells Techers, people interested in technology across the Synod. And this week, we had a huge outpouring of information around three different topics on the Wells Tech Listserv. First up, Pastor Rob Gunther, who's up in Kenai, Alaska, asked a question about cell phone blocking. And his situation was there's a Lutheran elementary school at his church, and they were having issues with students bringing cell phones. And even though they aren't supposed to have them, interestingly, the students were kind of stashing them away in a secret place, maybe somewhere in the restroom or whatever. And when they left the classroom, accessing their cell phones. And so he was looking for a solution, had heard that the local public high school was actually blocking cell phone access with some method, some software solution or something, where cell phone signals would not work on the high school setting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he asked about that, and that just brought forth a whole lot of great information from our community. In particular, that cell phone blocking solutions aren't necessarily legal. And so in order to do that kind of thing, you have to have special permission. But there are some solutions that are out there. I would think you'd have to proceed with caution if there are legal issues around blocking those kind of signals. Brilliant Me said, well, why not just block the sites on your school network? Not thinking that 4G or, cellular, you know, cell bypasses the whole wireless network kind of concept. So, yeah, lots of different angles to it. And I think one of the best things that I read that came out of it was that we have to teach our children to have discerning hearts, to be responsible digital citizens. And so rather than legalistically imposing, we need to work with our students to learn right and wrong. And that's a hard lesson, yeah, especially when those digital things are so bright and shiny and yeah, alluring, and everybody
social
wants
networks
to stay
there
connected
and whatever. See, I was kind of going the law side. I thought that maybe the best cell phone blocker you can get is find the biggest, burliest member that you have to come in and visit with each classroom and say, I don't want to have to come back and break you in two if I find you've been hiding your cell phone.
There's a high-tech solution for you. All right.
Yeah.
Additional discussion on the Wells Tech Listserv. A question from Pastor Steve Daly, who's at Petra in Sauk Rapids, Minnesota, just up the road from us here. And basically, I totally am with him. He expressed that he is a GTD guy. He's on top of his
to-do
list.
Way to go, Steve.
Got the inbox zero going, all that kind of stuff, except for one area, one pitfall in the whole solution, and that is dealing with contacts and keeping his contact list organized. So he is really appealing to the listserv for some ideas to help with that. And I know he got a few responses. Like I said, I'm not as up to date on my reading as I should be. I think some people suggested Plaxo as a solution, yeah, and someone else said they managed theirs through their Google contacts and just kind of were diligent about keeping up with their contact list there in Google contacts. I know through the years I've had a little black book where I diligently wrote down all my address and contact information. I often go back to my previous Christmas card list and have addresses there, you know, real technical, but once a year I look at my Christmas card list and update it. So I am just,
who let you on this show, Sal?
I don't know. We can try to find a replacement if you want. So yeah, other suggestions are welcome for Pastor Daly and for me. Truth be told.
I think that is the key, is one central place, because there's so many options. If you use Outlook and you use Gmail and you use all these other services, Yahoo or whatever, that it's hard to keep them in sync. And you just really need to say, this is the single source, and just dedicate some time to that. Just roll up your sleeves and say, this needs to be accurate. So, and Sally, good news on most of these, you can print them out.
Oh, what a concept. Yeah. I like killing trees.
You could put them in a black, you know, cover.
I could find a little black cover for them. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we synchronized across with our member database, tying back to our seven best list a few years ago. But even doing that kind of syncing takes diligence to keep it up to date and everything. So it's a challenge. I feel your pain. All right. Finally, on the Wells Tech Listserv, Pastor John Gunther wrote asking about equipment needs.
So we have a Rob Gunther and a John Gunther.
Apparently, it's the Gunther day. Okay. So just wondering what equipment we'd need besides PC and TVs with Wi-Fi to connect so that we could run PowerPoint messages to multiple TVs and video and sound from the TVs. The TVs would be more than 150 feet away from the PC laptop, and he's looking at setting this up in the church narthex to be able to show some PowerPoint type things rolling in the church narthex. So I know we got one response, and again, I'm not as up to date on it as I should be, but I think there are solutions for that kind of thing. I've seen it used at MVL, Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School. They have a greeting large screen TV that is in the commons area. At our doctor's office now, they have it. I mean, it's becoming more and more prevalent, so there must be options out there. So maybe more listeners and Wells Techers can chime in to that conversation as well.
Yeah, there are definitely splitter devices that will actually send multiple feeds out, you know, many, many feeds if you like. Another option would be just kind of a streaming, internal streaming service. So you could take advantage of some of that technology, and that would require some kind of computing device on each side, but that's possible.
Mm-hmm. All right. I wanted to make special mention this week of our DIGO list, and I'm just really excited to see more and more people involved with the Wells Tech DIGO group. Somebody recently said, I'm not familiar with this, I really don't know how to get started, but basically you'll need a free account on the DIGO website. And one of the main things you need to do is install some kind of a little plugin, and they offer a lot of different varieties for different browsers. But what this does is when you're on a site that you don't want to forget about, a site that you found interesting or whatever, you can click the little DIGO button in your browser, and it automatically saves a link to that site. You can add some notes to that link. You can add tags, which makes it really searchable, very powerful. And then you can also add a group. If you are part of the Wells Tech group, you can save the link to the Wells Tech group, and everyone who's part of that group can see the links that you've shared. And so if you aren't doing DIGO, just a great way to save your brain a lot of trouble of keeping up with all the great websites and articles and things that you come across. So via that Wells Tech group, then we've learned about several different interesting websites this week, including how to sync your iPhone so that you can get your calendars, picking and choosing which calendars from your Google Calendar you want to show up. There's an article about supercomputer being created from Legos and Raspberry Pi. Imagine that. We've talked about Raspberry Pi a lot in the last month on the podcast. It's a new $35 computer, fully functioning computer, and now someone's figured out how to make it multitask across multiple Raspberry Pis. They actually clicked together 64 Raspberry Pis and made a supercomputer. So all I need is 63 more of them, and we've got the Lego part covered. We have plenty of Legos for building the stand for it. But thanks, Pastor Michael Johnson, for sharing that link with me. There was an interesting article, and this was over on Internet Toolbox for Churches, and it's called An Internet Outreach Plan B Approach for Churches. And I really like this. I know one outreach theme that we talk about a lot in well circles, at least, is something called friendship evangelism, where you just become friends with people. And in the course of letting your light shine in your day-to-day interactions with them, you're able to share your faith. And that's basically what this article boiled down to. As I read it, it was like, hey, this is friendship evangelism for the digital world. Mm-hmm. And it was basically, it's not all about just sharing a sermon or something like that. It's more about communicating, being a friend to people, and in the process, being able to share God's word with them. So an interesting read. I thought it was worth sharing with the group.
Great. I may have to bookmark that site. I was not familiar with that one.
Yeah. Pastor Emil Burgess shared with us Memstash. I wonder if you've heard of this one, productivity wizard there. He says emails and or texts that you highlight something in a browser at certain intervals until you memorize it, and it pushes to Evernote as well.
So
remember
nice.
Anything, great memory tool.
I like it. And
then finally, there is Minecraft for Education, shared by Tom Rosenau. He's always hunting for new educational games, and I know Minecraft is really, really popular these days. So apparently someone's come up with an education twist on the open source code used for Minecraft. And if you aren't familiar with Minecraft, Martin, you got to get with the program.
I'm not.
It's a hot topic around my household, at least. But very interesting multiplayer game.
Okay.
You install on a server or whatever. And apparently you can install it for education purposes as well.
Okay. And it wouldn't be a Wells Tech podcast with any kind of community feedback without our Pinterest segment, Sally.
Well, of course, we have a Pinterest infographic to share, except that's one that I don't have up on my screen yet. So give me just a second to pull it up. The title of it is When Will Batteries Last the Work Week? So it's kind of an interesting look at battery life, and mm-hmm. it's done by the people at Lenovo, computer company. It used to be IBM's personal right. computer division, and it's now renamed to be called Lenovo. And basically, they're showing that, and let me get to the beginning of the infographic here, the battery life starting from like 1989, that nickel metal hydride batteries lasted a total of 16 minutes. And then how things progressed through time. By 1998, we were up to 1.6 hours with the lithium IO battery. Mm-hmm. And here we are in 2012, 5 to 9 hours of battery life. And so that's what you can kind of expect with like your iPads or whatever. By 2018, they think batteries will last 24 hours. And by 2023, 40 hours of battery life with a lithium silicon battery that is to come in the future, apparently. Hmm. So.
Batteries will last longer than we will at that age.
Yeah.
For sure.
Thanks to everyone who shared via Digo or Pinterest or our listserv. And my apologies if we missed a few in the process. We'll try to make sure we get everybody covered in the coming weeks.
Great. Thank you for that feedback, and keep it coming. We love it. Mm-hmm. Next week, Sally, we're returning to our education focus. We have one show a month. We talk about education all the time, but this is a show devoted to education technology. And Gail's back. Gail Potratz is one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents, and she's going to join us again. And not sure what we're talking about yet, are we?
Well, we do have an interview lined up. Yep. Talking with Chad Kafka from the Franklin Public School District. Oh, yeah. He's there in the Milwaukee area. And he is a Google certified teacher and an Apple distinguished educator. So got a lot going on. He actually has worked with Gail in the Milwaukee Digital Media Conference that they've both been a part of in the past. And so comes highly recommended by our friend Gail. And he is going to talk to us about his Google Apps distribution for a large middle school there in Franklin. Gail has actually got Google Chromebooks live in her school.
Just rolling that out this year. Yeah, so she'll
probably hear a little
firsthand experience. Yeah, absolutely.
Should be interesting, the move to one-to-one computing and its effects and pros and cons happy stories and probably some pitfalls as well. Should be fun.
Very good. Sally, that's probably enough for a show. Good to get back in the interview groove, and I'm looking forward to next week's interview, too. So tune in next week. Let's close the show with the music of Crosswalk Lutheran Ministries down there in Arizona, their song, You Are My World. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Down, I feel like I am lost and can't be found. And when I've given up, you're still around. You pull me up. Take this broken clay, restore it back to life, to work today. Because of all your goodness, I will say your name we pray. This you show, you are grace, you are love, you're an everlasting Savior. I am weak, but you are strong, and I will praise your name forever. Praise your name forever, you are my world, you are my world. Could I pretend that any of my works could ever mend a love for me so great? You chose to send your only son. Your love is full and free, and Jesus' sacrifice has covered me. You've given me a life eternally. By grace alone. And in all of this I see, you are grace, you are love, you're an everlasting Savior. I am weak, but you are strong, and I will praise your name forever. You are grace, you are love, you're an everlasting Savior. I am weak, but you are strong, and I will praise your name forever. Praise your name forever. I am finally free by what you've given for me. And I'll be with you for eternity. When I look to the cross, I see. You are grace, you are love, you're an everlasting Savior. I am weak, but you are strong, and I will praise your name forever. You are grace, you are love, you're an everlasting Savior. You are strong, and I will praise your name.